Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Pats peoples and Foxborough friends, welcome to the latest edition of Six Rings and Football Things, brought to you by your friends at WEEI, Odyssey, and 2400 Sports, your old pal. Nick Fitzy-Stevens here at the helm, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by a very special guest, a rather distinguished voice in the American sports landscape over the last half century. You may know him from his almost 30 years of work at the New York Daily News, as well as the 13 years he spent as a correspondent and talking head on Inside the NFL. You've read his columns, you've heard his words, and now he has weighed in with his take on the ultimate Boston sports bargument. Of course, Brady versus Belichick. Who's responsible for the dynasty, or rather, as I like to call it, the double dynastic run? Who deserves more credit? And in the end, who was most responsible for all that success that allowed us not to live in reality, but a surreality of championships, success, a little bit of arrogance, and a lot of duck boats? Mr. Gary Myers, author of Brady versus Belichick, The Dynasty Debate, joins us on Six Rings. Gary, as a lifelong sports fan, as a football guy, and just someone who appreciates good sports writing, it's a pleasure to meet you and talk to you today about this book and just all things football, sir.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Nick. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. Yes, no, it's a pleasure. So I got to ask first, since obviously I just detailed, and as you full well knew, getting into this, this is the most discussed, if not overwrought, discussion, debate, argument in Boston, New England, Patriots Nation, and beyond. It's even, I would dare say, on the national landscape. Some would even say it's almost played out to a degree, like Brady versus Belichick. Brady, like, it was inevitable that that would become a talking point in debate after their conscious uncoupling, if you will, back in March of 2020. And it's funny, it's a day that the rest of the world remembers as the COVID shutdown on St. Patrick's Day. Mm-hmm. But in New England, we forget that, like, it was St. Patty's or COVID shutdown, but rather like, oh my God, that's the day Tom Brady left the Patriots. I'll never be the same. And like, a lot of lives were changed, yet, you know, we enjoyed so much success that only now are we able to go back and really fully appreciate it. But we're always still wondering, like, who was it? Was it Brady or was it Belichick? So what made you want to go and touch upon that and reenter something that's been discussed so frequently?
Well, I think now that it's over and done with and they both moved on, and Bill staying in coaching after a year in the media, I think with the benefit of time, it gives us a different and perhaps fresh perspective on how to evaluate, you know, the 20 years together with 9 Super Bowl appearances and 6 championships. And I really think it's the greatest unanswered question in NFL history, because when you have the guy who turned out to be the greatest quarterback ever and played for the greatest coach ever. You know, very rarely does that ever happen. At one point, maybe you can say Walsh and Montana, but that didn't go on long enough. This is just a fascinating, like you say, double dynasty. I mean, three mm-hmm. Super Bowls in each part of the dynasty. The interesting way they came together in the beginning, the friction that developed at the end, and we have to have a winner. I mean, that's just how we're all structured in sports. We can't, nothing is a tie mm-hmm. except for it's a regular season NFL game that goes to the 10-minute overtime and someone doesn't kick a 65-yard field goal to win it.
Or a lousy All-Star game in 2002.
Yeah, right. So I thought that it would just be kind of a fun, interesting book to talk to as many people as I could and come to a conclusion.
I will say this, no spoilers, but for anyone that is interested in reading this who can't consume enough Brady, Belichick, and Patriots, who wants to bathe in the glories just like I and many do of that double dynastic run, Gary does, at book's end, pick a winner. This is not a, I've presented the facts, now I'll let you choose your own adventure or, you know, walk away. Like, this isn't the, you don't leave us with a, well, why the hell didn't you play Butler in Super Bowl 52? Rather, you do pick a winner and give them a numerical value. And you touch upon that in the book as well. That's another one of those ones where it's just sort of like, I don't know if Belichick understands. One of the things about him that is so curious, and I know you cover him and discuss him in the Cleveland years and the Jets years as well. So, and working with the New York Daily News, you are incredibly familiar with him, with Parcells on the Patriots, back with the Jets, the famous cocktail napkin resignation and everything else. He's always had this blind side to how people feel about him, what they think about him, and why people judge him the way that they do. Did you ever get any insight as to how and why he operated that way, Gary?
Well, you know, first of all, I've known him since 1979 when he was a young assistant with the Giants, and
yep.
I was just getting started in the business. And just to dispel one mm-hmm. myth, it wasn't a cocktail napkin that he resigned on. It was a piece of loose leaf paper.
Oh, well, okay. So like a Mead three-ring binder?
Yeah, it was something like that. You know, somehow it's been perpetuated throughout the years that it's a cocktail napkin. But
it's like everybody – it's like, you know, my dad – you know, RIP, my dad used to say, like, oh, Nico, I was there at Ted Williams' final game when he hit a home run and ran into the dugout and never was to be seen again. And there were only 10,000 people there that day, famously at Fenway, Gary. But 150,000 people have a story as to being there that day.
Oh, absolutely. You know? That's how it works. Yeah. Absolutely. But, you know, show your ticket as proof, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Picks or ticks or it didn't happen.
Yeah, I don't know why Belichick would have a cocktail napkin in his pocket anyhow. You know, so it makes it perfect. And I was there for the press conference. I don't know. I mean, he had already written out his resignation, and given it to them. But I mean, obviously, one of the most bizarre press conferences I've ever attended in my life. That press conference and the one where Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys, which I was also at because I was working in Dallas then. The two most fascinating press conferences I've ever been to. But anyhow, get back to your question is why, you know, Belichick had given
his curious demeanor and how he's always sort of been obtusely oblivious to why people think the way of him that they do, or like that they judge him the way they do, despite his demeanor and decision-making without ever giving explanation.
Okay. Well, I mean, he obviously doesn't care what anybody thinks about him. He obviously never felt an obligation to really explain any of his decisions. The Malcolm Butler one, to this day, I did an event with Jason McCourty on mm-hmm. Monday night, and everybody knows what a great guy Jason is. And he was. I'm sorry, Devin McCourty.
Devin, yeah, no, yeah, J-Mac is also great, and
he's a great guy too.
Yes, he's been a guest on the podcast. I've hosted live events with Devin before, and I got to say, and you reference him and talk to him in the book as well. He's one of the many great Patriot Nation voices from the run that you speak to. He is awesome and truly like one of the people. He had talent to play in the NFL, but he thrived under Bill Belichick.
Yeah, Devin is a tremendous guy, and he and Jason look alike and they sound alike, so I confused them there. But I don't really know Jason. I've gotten to know Devin really well, and you know, he just painted a really, you know, interesting picture of what was happening around the Patriots at the time, that They were all bought in because they wanted to win, and they knew what they were dealing with. But just as far as dealing with Belichick,
right?
And you know, he had this intimidating presence around the team. But as far as Malcolm Butler is concerned, so I did a book signing with Devin in New Jersey this past Monday night, and I, you know, one of the questions I asked, we did a Q&A, a bunch of people were there, and I said, I tried as hard as I could to get an explanation that I could present in the book as a definitive explanation. And I said, I couldn't do it. I said, when I told the people that were there, that I said, when I interviewed Devin, he didn't even know.
Nope.
And he doesn't. And Belichick has never explained it to Kraft. When I asked Belichick for this book about it, he goes, what does that have to do with Brady and Belichick discussion you're having?
Or was that everything to do with it, Brady? Bill, that's the thing.
I was asking him a bunch of questions about Brady, and he goes, what does that have to do with your book? And I go, well, you know, kind of, sort of. And he went down. Now, I've heard a lot of theories, but nothing that I felt comfortable writing other than, you know, I think Malcolm was sick that week and he got to the site in Minneapolis late. And then there was some issues maybe that happened at practice, but still he played 99% of the snaps in the championship game, and not to play one defensive snap in the Super Bowl and turn Nick Foles into Joe Montana was, I mean, that was coaching malpractice. Mm-hmm. And it nearly, I do know that if he didn't turn it around the next year and prove to Kraft that he still knew what he was doing, which he did, and that holding the Rams to 3 points in that Super Bowl the next year, if that didn't happen, he was going to get fired. And I think that at that point, Kraft would have sided with Brady and kept Tom and fired Belichick. But the Butler thing is the biggest mystery. And for him to bench this, and I know that people in New England, you know, have heard this for years, but it had to be something really major to bench a corner. Okay, you want to bench him the first series to prove a point?
Like, okay. Welker in the famous playoff game against the Jets.
Against the Jets, because he had said some stuff. I was really surprised by that one, that Belichick was, in essence, defending Rex Ryan by benching Welker, who was saying stuff about Rex, and we had a whole foot fetish thing that went on here in New York, which was very entertaining, by the way.
I thought it made for great theater, and I loved the pro wrestling manager vibe and dynamic between Belichick and Rex Ryan. And I always thought Rex Ryan gave great theater. That's why I was a fan of him in the league.
That was another memorable press conference when we were waiting for the first person to be asking Rex about the video of him and his wife. I mean, that was very funny press conference.
It was, but see, you just outlined right there, exactly, like, you proved the point why the book has legs and these discussions will carry on, and why things get tilted a certain way in the book, because and in the story, because if Belichick not seeing that sitting Malcolm Butler and choosing to play Johnson Batamosi and Jordan, I've even literally wiped the name of the other safety that he played over Malcolm Butler out of my mind. He was so bad.
Well, over the other corners that he played.
Yeah. He plays all these other guys in favor of Malcolm Butler who all make mistakes and get smoked on certain plays in that Super Bowl. If he his legacy is different and people will think differently of him if he doesn't make that decision, or at least outlines it. Now, the next year, like you point out, and they did so in the Dynasty docuseries, which obviously had a deleterious effect on Belichick and sadly Robert Kraft's reputation as well. And I love the book, and I've spoken to Jeff Benedict, and I great writer, great book, but like everything just sort of got very convoluted by the end. And it sadly became an acrimonious affair between Belichick and Kraft, and kind of still is to this day. But that next year in Super Bowl 53, a Super Bowl nobody expected the Patriots to make it to.
Right.
They have a dominant game plan to shut down one of the top 10 offenses of all time. And that restores luster to Belichick's reputation, but still therein linger all of these debates. As you were speaking to people like D-Mac and Teddy Johnson and Matt Cassel and Julian Edelman and all the other folks that you get that are a part of this great work, Gary, what did you learn about the Brady Belichick dynamic before that you hadn't really ever, that you weren't aware of? And how did that affect your perspective on who was more responsible for the dynastic success?
Well, I think the main thing is in a Brady Belichick relationship, how Bill never ceased to treat Tom as a sixth round pick trying to make the team. Despite his accomplishments, he kind of used Tom as a pincushion in front of the team, whether it be at meetings, in meetings or on the practice field. Now, part of the reason was even after Tom won a couple of Super Bowls, he was still liked to be coached hard and had real thick skin. And Belichick knew he was proving a point with the rest of the team. Like, I can pick on Tom Brady. You know, how do you as the, you know, the safety or the backup corner, or, you know, pick your position. You have no right to complain if Tom Brady's not complaining. But I think behind the scenes that players were really taken aback by that. I mean, to go back to McCourty, I said, how was it that, you know, Tom is home, has got two young kids at home, and, you know, is being a dad and presumably disciplining his kids, and then he gets in his car and goes to work and is treated like a child. I said, that had to be really hard mentally for him. He goes, he wasn't the only one. He goes, you know, a lot of us had kids at home and then had to get treated like that. That it was difficult. And, you know, in a way, and Devin didn't necessarily say this, but I think it's implied, is that their respect for Brady just increased because he didn't give him any pushback on it, and he's willing to take it. Maybe they would have even respected him more if he got up in a meeting one day and said, hey, Bill, enough already. You know, we've look what we've accomplished together, and, you know, pick on somebody else if that has to be your style. Tom never did that, but that's not to be mistaken with he got really tired of it. And as his dad, who was very outspoken in my book, said, you know, with Belichick, the thing that he thinks Tom resented is that it came to be, you know, expectation rather than appreciation. Mm-hmm. And any of us who have a boss who's kind of demanding, at some point, even as accomplished as you are, you'd like to hear him say, you know, nice job. And not to only do it, you know, after Super Bowl where they're telling each other they love each other because everybody's so euphoric at that point. But I think if Belichick had treated Tom differently towards, say, the last 5 or 6 years, that and that he was as complimentary with him as in public as he was after he left and after he retired, if that had gone on, say, from 2012 or 13 on, I think they both would have finished their career in New England.
I couldn't agree more. I think after Super Bowl 49, which you speak of at length and was obviously a huge turning point because no team had ever gone with the same quarterback and head coach combination, a decade between Super Bowl victories.
Well, forget about it as a combination. I mean,
no franchise.
Individually, yeah. No coach had gone 10 years between winning Super Bowls and no quarterback had done that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they did it together was amazing.
It's remarkable. And that they did it under the circumstances they did it as the Deflategate saga was exploding and going hyper viral before our very eyes. Obviously, for people like myself and yourself, a content generating machine, which is why the Patriots were so fun and why books like this get written and people still read them and love them and want to talk about them, Gary, because the Patriots were, you know, as they say in every great narrative, you know, the story is on this, the hero's journey is only as good as the bad guy in the story. And the Patriots on the national landscape became the beautiful bad guy for so long. Everybody loved to hate them, and we loved to be hated in New England because, well, that's just a New England thing. But I agree with you that if by the, you know what, by the end of Super Bowl 51, when everything went sideways and they Tom orchestrates the ultimate comeback 28-3, if at the end of that, Belichick just sort of ceded a little bit to him and said, you know what, obviously, Tom, you're incomparable, whatever. Here's a blank check. Just write whatever. We'll find a way, you know, as opposed to as is referenced in the book, like, well, we got to 2020 and we just knew we couldn't field a good team anymore. It doesn't matter. Find a way. Kick that can down the road further. Bill, he's Tom effing Brady. Like, give him the blank check. Ride his tails. Go out together. Like, once Michael Jordan left, Gary, Phil Jackson also got on a motorcycle and rode away from the Bulls. And Michael Jordan didn't have much success, and Phil Jackson did in L.A. with a super team. But it's just a shame that they never were able to. That's a great point there, that if they had just, if Bill had softened up a little bit and not called Brady's efforts in AFC championships open, you know, well, it's not like it's open heart surgery. If he had just said, you know, the way he, you point out that he lovingly speaks of him on the NFL Network and at the Brady night, like no quarterback could have ever done what he did. Right. There's no quarterback I ever would have wanted more. I think it teaches all of us, like, tell the ones you love that you love them in this lifetime before it's too late.
Absolutely. And the thing that's really, you know, I wonder sometimes, and maybe you have, I'm sure you have your own opinion on this. I don't think that Bill pushed Tom out the door to then try to prove that he can win a Super Bowl without Brady. I think Bill was way past that point of worrying about that stuff. The biggest surprise to me was that he didn't have a succession plan in place. Maybe we can say it was supposed to be Garoppolo, and whether Tom pushed him out, Garoppolo out by going to Kraft. I mean, that seems to be the prevailing sentiment. But Garoppolo's contract was also coming up, and he was in the last year of his four-year deal that he signed as a rookie. And how are you going to pay him at that point? He wanted to go start somewhere.
Right.
And if Brady wasn't going to retire, how do you, you know, it would have been an impossible situation. So, but that didn't prevent Belichick from trying to start the cycle over again by drafting another quarterback. I mean, he drafted Garoppolo as the eventual successor, and that was the first time that Tom thought that Belichick drafted somebody that was going to eventually take his place. Now, it didn't happen, but in the drafts of 2018 and 19 and 20, where was the quarterback?
Right.
He wound up signing Cam Newton, who was washed at that point, a month before training camp to start.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you
in COVID with no game plan? Gary, it's great that you bring this up. This was always back to discussing, like we did, Belichick's blind spots, and he never.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Had a succession plan for Gronk. He had no succession plan for Julian Edelman. Mm-hmm. There was no Tom Brady succession plan. He was always so hyper-focused on game plans, winning, and all things Belichick that he would forget to do something as simple as make sure once the Garoppolo thing blew up on him, it was like, well, that's it. Fine. Whatever. And he didn't then get somebody else. Like, it didn't even have to be Lamar Jackson, just somebody who could have, beyond Jarrett Stidham, who would have hopefully been it's always tough to take over for the man, let alone the legend or the goat. But yeah, these became things. And I do think Bill wanted to kind of prove, there were a lot of people out there, I believe, that Bill wanted to prove that he could win with anybody and that he was as much of a star as Brady. And perhaps there was some behind closed doors humbling in recent years, because look what Tom did. Yeah. Granted, the Tampa roster was better than people gave it credit for, but he goes down there and lights it up and does something unbelievable in year one in Tampa.
FanDuel's getting you ready for the NFL season with an offer you won't want to miss. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right. Pick a bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride the live lines. Whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season is almost here. The only question is, are you ready to play. Visit FanDuel.com/2400 to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, permitted parishes only, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, or Wyoming. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York or visit oasas.ny.gov/gambling. Standard text messaging rates apply. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, Bill has a huge ego. We all know that, and yeah. Tom does as well. And maybe part of it, I mean, I'd like to think that he always felt get rid of a player a year too early,
right?
Then a year too late.
Richard Seymour is the perfect example.
Absolutely, Logan Mankins. It goes on and on.
Yep.
But I have a hard time believing that he pushed Brady out because he wanted to say, "All right, this guy's got enough credit. I'm going to go prove that I can win without him because I couldn't prove that, you know, in my Cleveland years and then the beginning of the New England years when he was 5-13 with Bledsoe until Bledsoe got hurt." I just have a hard time thinking a guy who is as competitive as Belichick would get rid of Brady only because he wanted to show, all right, the guy's he's towards the end, he's past 40 years old. I'm going to now show that I'm the one who can sustain this. I truly believe that he thought that Brady was just about done.
Yeah.
And that he didn't want to pay him what it was going to cost to keep him. And the compromise was reached that they cut off the last year of his contract and he become a free agent with no franchise tag. And I think it's clear that Kraft regrets siding with Belichick in this.
Yes.
And it must have been incredibly difficult for him to do this. Now, I will tell you, listeners, that I tried really hard to get Kraft. The reason he wouldn't talk to me is because of the Dynasty documentary, in which he thought he came off really horribly. Mm-hmm. And in my book, I had planned prior to that documentary. I had already started, you know, planting the seeds on that. And then I watched it. I go, boy, this was so one-sided, especially the last three episodes. And then what I was most surprised about, really, Nick, was the pushback that the Patriots gave afterwards. And I'd really like to hear, and I like Robert a lot. I would just like to hear him talk about what his input was on it, because we all saw, you know, the credit line at the end of every episode, you know, Kraft Patriots Productions or something, you know, something.
Yeah. That it was, it wasn't Kraft Sports Productions, but it was a separate LLC that had Kraft attached to it as well. And they were stunned by the optics of it as well. I think they were, I think the organization, the Kraft family at large were stunned by the way that went. And it created just more animosity, you know, more animus was created where it didn't need to, because we were already still, people will never get over the uncoupling of Brady and Belichick. People will never get over. And that's why, last two things I want to point out, Gary, you've been very generous with your time today. One, you sort of set the stage at the end, which is your beginning, which is how cathartic and important Tom Brady night was for the fans, for Brady, for Belichick, for their relationship as the greatest, not just even quarterback coach combo, but maybe duo in American sports history. And that the fans got to see the family back together.
Well,
and
you guys in Boston know that Auerbach and Bill Russell are pretty good together, right?
Yeah, they were also pretty good. let's be honest, they were pretty good too. But one of the greatest, certainly the greatest combo in NFL history. But how important Brady night was. And folks, if you're like myself and you can never get enough of these stories and you just, you want to live in the dynasty and, you know, we're great in New England for going back and, you know, basking in our glory days, Gary. You're the only guy because of your, you know, because of your New York ties, you're the only guy to get Mo Lewis and to get Mo Lewis, the infamous Mo Lewis, who never should have to buy a sandwich or a drink in New England as long as the man shall live. You're the only one to get him to go on the record about it as well, which I thought was a chef's kiss touch.
I think that's really the best chapter in the book because it's the most revealing.
Yes.
Of that Bledsoe play and what happened to Mo when he feels like he's a football outcast. And really the Jets have not him, the fans blame him for Brady and the organization has not put him in the Ring of Honor. Now in the end, I do like a cast of characters thing. Mm-hmm. And for Mo, at the end of what I write about him, I said, you know, the Jets haven't put him in the Ring of Honor, but maybe the Patriots should put him in their Hall of Fame. And I'm only kind of half kidding about that.
No, no, I know. Honestly, he'd be welcome just the same way like Mariano Rivera tortured Red Sox fans and Boston sports fans at large.
Right?
But, you know, when they were introduced, one of my favorite moments as a fan of the Empire versus the Nation and the great rivalry of Yankees Red Sox is when the Red Sox got their rings in spring 2005. They opened against the Yankees. And when Mariano Rivera was introduced, the Fenway Park gave him a standing ovation and he smiled and tipped his cap. Like he got it. He understood his role and everything and how huge that was to baseball, the American sports landscape and New England as well. So
the thing that has got lost and I really tried to point it out is that Mo Lewis was a great player.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he was really a great player. He made all pro teams, he made Pro Bowls, just didn't have the visibility because the Jets stunk for most of his time there.
Right.
Except pretty much in 98 when Parcells' second year, they got into the championship game. All he was trying to point out is that Bledsoe was not a running quarterback. Mo is like, as Pepper Johnson described, it was like a scud missile. Bledsoe knew that Belichick didn't like him. Mm-hmm. He knew that Belichick loved Brady after two training camps. In fact,
yep.
I was told that he really wanted to start the season in 01 with Brady, but just didn't have the courage to go into Kraft's office and say, I'm benching the guy you just paid $103 million to.
Yeah. And because as you point out, you know, everything went sideways on him with replacing Kozar with Testaverde right. in Cleveland. So he'd been burned, you know, fool me once, shame on you.
Exactly. And so Nick, I think when Bledsoe is doing something out of character, which is trying to run 10 yards for a first down, it was 3rd and 10. It was late in the game. The Pats were down by 7. So he's running and just sees the sticks along the right sideline. Mo Lewis is running towards him, and he fully expected Bledsoe to run out of bounds.
Yeah.
Bledsoe turned.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It in a little bit if you watch that video and Bledsoe.
Mm-hmm. I was there that night. I was lucky enough to be there, and I've told people, you know, we had a flyover, there were fireworks, yeah. It was a huge moment. Andrewsy running out with the flags, like yeah, this was the first game post 9/11. Yet the loudest noise in the stadium that night was the noise of Mo Lewis's pads hitting Drew Bledsoe's chest. It was like a gun went off. It was unbelievable.
That would have been an amazing line for me to use in the book. I wish I was on with you writing it. But, you know, you're right. I mean,
yeah.
There are players. Marvin Jones, who was another really good Jets linebacker, he wasn't in on that play. And he's standing, you know, 53 and a third yards away on the opposite sideline from where that hit was. Right. And he said it was the loudest hit he's ever heard all the way across the field. And obviously, you know, Brady has said that. Ted Johnson said that. Loudest hit they ever heard and never heard another one like that.
No.
And, I mean, the backstory of, you know, Drew going back on the field for the next series and the players in the huddle think he's a little out of it. And he gets diagnosed with a concussion, but that's all they thought it was. And they bring him into the locker room afterwards, and his heart rate, I think, when you have a concussion, your heart rate either speeds up or slows down. I can't remember, but I have it in the book. And Drew's was going in the opposite direction that would have been indicative of a concussion. And that's what led the doctors to say, there's something going on here. And Drew goes, okay, you know, I'm going to take a shower. I'll go sleep on it, and I'll come back in the morning if I'm not feeling well. And they go, no. You're going to the hospital, young man. So he's riding in the ambulance, and, you know, getting out of the stadium there on Route 1
is a nightmare.
And so it's a long ride, and I guess they're trying to circumvent it somehow, but it's still a long ride regardless. And, you know, going over the bumps, and Drew's younger brother was in the ambulance with him and told Drew, like a year or two later, there was a point there that I thought you were dead because you had completely blacked out. Yeah. And so the thing I think I was really surprised with Mo Lewis was he really came off totally detached from Drew's medical situation. And that kind of caught me off guard that he never called to find out how he was doing, never really paid attention to it. And by the time he found out that Drew was okay, you know, he's out of the hospital, he felt no need to make a phone call to his family or anything like that.
And it's a very unfortunate situation that developed, like you said, in the career of somebody who was an excellent football player.
And did nothing wrong. Sure,
no, did nothing wrong. He just made a play, and it seems to have scarred him as well. And it's just one of those little details along the way that colors the tapestry of this incredible dynamic and this incredible team and, you know, how important they were in the NFL and the American sports landscape. There are stories like this and more woven throughout the almost 300 pages, folks. Like I said, if you're like myself and you can never get enough about the double dynastic run, Brady, Belichick, and all things Patriots, pick up a copy of Brady versus Belichick, The Dynasty Debate now at your local bookstore, Amazon and beyond. And of course, for his takes, his information, or some information as to where he may be doing an interview or a book signing next, follow him at Gary Myers NY on the socials as well. Gary, thanks for your time today. Thank you for the copy of the book. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you, as many should now, since we've experienced so much success in New England, taking a New York-centric sports writer's perspective to lend some voice and perspective on this dynasty. And also kudos to you for having the stones to actually weigh in with a verdict at the end. A lot of people around here can't. So great job. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Nick, thanks for having me on. And I just want to mention that I think the fact that I'm emotionally detached from the whole Patriot run. And I tend to be that way anyhow with anything football, because, you know, when you do what I've done for all these years, you're not a fan, you know, you just got to write what you see and all that kind of stuff. But the fact that I had no emotional attachment to the story, I think, allowed me to be, you know, critical where I need to be critical and not worried about ticking anybody off. And just having I don't want to say an outsider's perspective, because I covered a lot of Patriot games.
Oh, yeah.
During that run.
The most hated man in New York for 20 years was Tom Brady, except when he played Eli in a Super Bowl.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
The most hated man in New York for 20 years. Outside of, you know, the villains of a particular day in September was Tom Brady, except for whenever he played Eli Manning.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
So I think my perspective on it, you know, is kind of a fresh perspective.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And I really hope people enjoy reading it. There's a lot of stuff in there that I didn't know, and I don't think a lot of people knew, just a lot of behind the scenes stuff that really puts us in a little bit of a different light.
Well, the man does not have a vote in the Pro Football Hall of Fame by accident, folks. He's been covering our great and favorite sport, which has truly taken over as our national pastime for quite some time. And that perspective and that analysis and intelligence is on display for you to enjoy, Pats fans, in Brady versus Belichick, the dynasty debate. Gary, thanks so much. It was an absolute pleasure. And thank you, folks, for listening to the latest episode of Six Rings and Football Things with author Gary Myers. This has been brought to you by WEEI Odyssey and 2400 Sports. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and of course the Odyssey app. Gary, have a great one. We hope to talk to you again down the line, sir.
Thanks a lot, Nick. Take care.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening, folks. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon with more about the 2025 Patriots. And as always, go Pats.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.